Welcome back to Coffee and Capitalism Radio, heard on the Crude Life Media Network. My name is Jason Spies, and I'm your host today. In our next segment, we talk with Dean Gorder, Executive Director for the North Dakota Trade Office.
Whether it be Cuba or whether it be to Kazakhstan.
You know, Kazakhstan is kind of a good case study because when the state of North Dakota really went in there in force. So the politicians were there. I think at that time, now Governor Dalrymple as Lieutenant Governor, I think was one of the first politicians, but Doug Goring's been there, Drew Wrigley's been there. So the government support was there, which gives a former Soviet Union territory confidence. So that's one thing that's important in all trade missions in certain parts of the world, China, Russia, Kazakhstan, et cetera. You have to have that government support. So once you have that, then the business follows. So you've got, you know, the large machinery manufacturers and the cattle producers are really who focused on Kazakhstan. But what they differentiated is that they just didn't sell them product. They provided training. There's been hundreds of Kazakhstan farmers and ranchers that have been to North Dakota. They've attended training at NDSU. They've attended training that the trade office has put on and the individual companies have put on. So the sales in part, not in total, but in part, were due to the fact that the relationship that was built between North Dakota and Kazakhstan extended beyond just the sale of a piece of machinery or the sale of a cow. Mm-hmm. And that was really important in that market. Other markets, one that we've really been stressing on the food side in the last couple of years has been Colombia. So we develop a strategy, and so it's been a series of trade missions both to Colombia and then also bringing those buyers from Colombia back to North Dakota. And so we've done, the last 3 years, we've had people down to Colombia, and now in August, it'll be 3 years in a row, there's been buyers that have come back. So it's a great way to build that relationship, and you really develop a pipeline. And it's broader than just one or two companies on either side. You know, you've got a company from North Dakota selling to three different people in Colombia. Those three people in Colombia might be buying from four different companies in North Dakota. So you really get some depth in that channel. It's not just a one-off. It's ongoing business.
What would be the product in Colombia?
Biggest one's dry beans.
Dry beans, okay.
Yep, but there's also interest in flax and in peas and some other things. But the biggest one to date has been dry beans. Lentils actually also have been fairly big down there.
Hmm. More of the pulse crops again, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And part of that, you know, 2016 was designated the year of the pulse by the United
Nations. Oh,
you're
kidding me.
No. So your timing is good. And so there's been a lot of publicity over the last, you know, really probably year, you know, first promoting, you know, up to the beginning of the year and now ongoing. And so they've held what they call conclaves around the world that are focused on pulses. And when you look at the nutritional value of the pulse family of crops, there really is no equal. And then one little quirk in North Dakota is that there happens to be a lot of selenium in the soil, and that is absorbed into the pulse crops. So, and that's a micronutrient that the body needs, and it's fairly rare. I mean, it's, you know, very few crops have selenium in it. Crops produced in North Dakota do.
Well, my interest came mostly through the nutritional side of mm-hmm. pulse, to where another story I've been covering for at least 10 years is how having like a vegan diet can actually cure some certain illnesses and et cetera.
Sure.
And the way that a lot of people got their protein was through the pulse crops, was through the chickpeas and lentils and that sort of thing.
Yep.
And so that's interesting to hear that it's kind of coinciding. If you looked at those two lines, they'd kind of go side by side.
Yep.
Yeah.
I would agree.
How about NDSU here? You're in Berry Hall at NDSU. Mm-hmm. You were downtown Fargo for a number of years, mm-hmm. but now you're here. So what kind of partnership and what sort of a relationship you guys have here?
It's actually fairly varied. One of the programs we operate in conjunction with NDSU is called the Export Assistant Program. So if a master's or doctoral level student applies at NDSU and they have an interest in international business, NDSU will introduce the trade office to this student, And if the student gains acceptance, they actually come into the export assistant program, they get their tuition waived, and then we place them with an export company in this region, and they actually work for that company during the time they're here. And if you think of it, it's a very effective program because it builds a really long-term bridge. If the student ends up staying in North Dakota working for that company, you still got to connect back to their market. If they happen to go back to their home country, you still have that very strong connect back to that market.
Okay.
And so that's one program. Today, in fact, right now, we've got a group of from China that are in town, and they're out at the NCI feed mill out on the west end of campus. And they're interested in forage crops and how to improve, feeding of cattle, both dairy and beef and pork. And so they're going to be in town all week. And it's about a 50-50 mix between meeting with NDSU professors and, other experts in a given field. And then the other half is actually meeting with companies that, a company like Haybuster, for instance, will be here tomorrow meeting with this group. And Haybuster is going to try selling the grinding tubs that they're now learning about at NDSU. So you try structure the schedule in a manner where they get the information that they came here to get, but at the same time, it's a commercial venture where we're introducing them to companies. Superior Manufacturing, the grain bin people, will be here meeting with them this week. You mentioned AGT. This company also has interest in peas, so AGT, among other pulse companies, will be meeting with them this week trying to sell them peas. So.
To listen to the full-length interview with Dean Gorder, Executive Director for the North Dakota Trade Office, or to listen to other Coffee and Capitalism features, visit cafecapitalism.com. That's cafecapitalism.com. My name is Jason Spies, and this is Coffee and Capitalism Radio, heard on the Crude Life Media Network.
My name is Otis, and I am the host of the Kids in Capitalism KidCast. Let me tell you about one of our sponsors. Hatch Realty is in the business of helping people. They just happen to sell real estate. Call Eric Hatch or anyone on the Hatch Realty team with any real estate question. They want to be a resource and connection for you. That's Hatch Realty, 701-212-1572. That's 701-212-1572. Hatch Realty in the business of helping people. They just happen to sell real estate. Hatch Realty, tell them Otis sent you.
Since 1979, MBI Energy Services has committed to responsibly growing with today's oil and gas industry by providing proven experience, strategic locations, and integrated services. MBI Energy Services is well established, and its innovation in safety and excellent customer service is what truly makes MBI Energy Services the oil field service professionals. MBI Energy Services, the cutting edge in oil field safety solutions. Learn more at MBIEnergyServices.com.
Welcome back to Coffee and Capitalism Radio, heard on the Crude Life Media Network. My name is Jason Spies, and I'm your host today. Up next, barbecue tips from our company cookers.
So what's your name and who are you cooking for?
I'm Josh Franken, and I'm cooking for St. Alexis Hospital.
What are you cooking today?
I'm cooking pork. I've got one tri-tip in there, but I've been doing pork for about 14 hours right now.
So describe that 14-hour process. Is there a marinade, an injection, a rub?
I bought locally here at the Worst Shop, and the great people to work with there, and brought the stuff home. I rubbed it all down, let it sit for about a half an hour, put it into my smoker last night at 200 degrees, let it smoke for 2 hours, pull it off of the smoker, put them into roasting pans, let them roast for 10 hours, pull them back off, shred them up, put them back into the smoker, and let them smoke now for about another 3.5-4 hours.
So you almost got a full day into each one of these pieces of pork that people are eating, huh?
It's a labor of love, absolutely.
You can taste the love, that's right. It looks like you guys got some tortillas.
Yes, we do. We're kind of doing a mixture here. We've got a salsa marinade that we're putting on top of it. We've got a corn and a flour shell over here on the side that we're putting into them. We've got some different flavors, barbecue sauces that we're using. So kind of doing the tango two-step for people's mouths now, right now.
Where are you from?
I'm right here in Dickinson, South Park.
Oh, you're South Hart. Okay. I love going to the Farmer's Daughter's Cafe.
There you go.
How about your background? How did you get to be the cooker? Do you got a background in this, or are you just the guy who barbecues in the backyard the most?
Actually, I used to run a catering business back in Oregon before we moved up here about four years ago. My wife here works for the hospital, and I've cooked for a bunch of different folks around for the hospital, different functions, marathon, for tailgating parties. And, when they wanted to do pork, it's my way of helping out with the community, helping out with the hospital. They do a phenomenal job to me, and I want to just kind of help them back. So they asked me if I wouldn't mind doing it, and absolutely not a problem.
Tips for somebody, without giving away your trade secrets, tips for somebody who's an aspiring pit master of any age.
Some of my how I learned was actually a bunch of people would come over to my house. I used to be a police officer, and a bunch of people would come over to the house and loved my food, and eventually I just kind of picked it up, moved slowly through it, bought things. Now,
hey folks, I'm multimedia journalist Jason Spies, and the host of Building the Bakken Radio and Coffee and Capitalism. Traveling across the Rocky Mountain region and the upper Midwest has introduced me to many new people, landed me in exciting places, and created lifelong connections. And there's one place I want to tell you about today, and that's the Lodge at Deadwood. It is without a doubt my favorite place to stay in the Black Hills. In fact, not only is it my favorite, it's pretty much everybody else's. They're a three-time recipient of the best hotel, best casino, and best overall restaurant in the Black Hills. So if you're planning a conference, maybe a weekend getaway, a wedding, whatever it might be, I truly invite you to check out the Lodge at Deadwood and find out why they're consistently voted the best hotel, the best casino, and the best restaurant. Now listen, if I didn't believe that the Lodge at Deadwood was the best place to stay in the Black Hills, I wouldn't be doing this testimonial across our media network, which spans 5 states and 30 plus radio stations. And I feel very confident when I say the Lodge at Deadwood will exceed all your expectations. Check them out online today at deadwoodlodge.com. That's deadwoodlodge.com.